Welcome back to the Mark Claire Show. I've got a great conversation with you today with an absolute living legend in many ways. Probably, if not the world's foremost expert on the Nephilim, L.A. Marzulli. He's a very in-demand man, was only able to give me an hour, so no smoke-filled room, no traditional smoke-filled room for premium subscribers, but I am going to have a very special smoke-filled room of my own with a special guest reacting to this interview. So still going to get some primo content. I want you to check it all out by heading over to markclaire.com is where you'll get all your options, whether it's Patreon, Rockfin, Subscribestar. You can now even become a member on YouTube, or you can even subscribe directly to the premium feed directly in your Apple Podcast feed. So I give you plenty of options. Some might say too many options, but I want to make it as convenient for you as possible. So whatever method works for you the best, check it out. You can find all the links there at markclaire.com, markclaire.com. If you don't want to join, that's okay. But I do ask that you at least check out our great sponsors at Fox & Sons Coffee. Foxandsons.com, FOXNSONS.com. Stephen Fox, I just locked him in for the entire year. He is the sponsor of the Mark Claire Show, and he deserves your support. So if you enjoy this show, hey, just go click around. Go to foxandsons.com, pick a little bag or two, and you're going to get yourself 18% off your order. It's the Mark Claire discount. Use discount code MCS at checkout, and you're going to get 18% off. I don't think that's a beatable deal. I challenge you to try. Either way, Steven's a great man with a great company, teaching his sons about entrepreneurship through this coffee company and delivering some incredibly high quality, fresh coffee beans at the same time. You got to check it out. My friends, enjoy today's conversation with L.A. Marzulli. Welcome back to the Mark Claire Show. My guest today is a prolific, and I do not use that word lightly, a prolific author of 13 and a half is the number we've come up with, 13 and a half books. He's done 30 films. And as far as I'm concerned, he is one of the world's, if not the world's, foremost expert on the subject of the Nephilim. I'm very pleased to welcome L.A. Marzulli. L.A., welcome to my show.
Well, thanks so much, Mark. Appreciate it. And thanks for the kudos. I don't know about the foremost, but I'm certainly one of the top guys anyway, so we'll leave it at that.
Well, you're certainly the foremost I've had on this show so far, so we'll at least go from there. Now, LA, there's a lot of directions to go into. No matter what, we're only going to be able to scratch the surface of your work today in an hour-long conversation, but I do want to take a little time first to get to know you a little bit better and find out how you first became so fascinated by the subject to the point that you've essentially dedicated your life to it, seemingly.
Well, it really goes back to 1990. Where a friend of mine asked me about life on other planets, life in other worlds, and I didn't have an answer for him. So I went down to the Christian bookstore and I found this book, The Omega Conspiracy by Dr. I.D.E. Thomas. So this is, 1990. It's a long time ago. And I probably read that in one sitting. I mean, it absolutely captivated me in ways that few books ever have. And I reread it and I ordered, and in order to order, there was no Amazon in 1990. So you had to go down to the bookstore, fill out a form, and I ordered the Book of Enoch for starters. And that, of course, that came like 3 or 4 weeks later. But that book changed my life. I found out that Dr. Thomas lived close to where I am in the Santa Monica Mountains. And I asked if I could interview him and meet with him. So we did. And that struck up this friendship, which I think if he was alive, he passed in 2014. Mm-hmm. I think if he was alive and could see how far we've taken it, we're standing on his shoulders, but he's passed the ball to us, and we're way downfield now, with 13 books, basically, on the Nephilim, UFOs, and the Omega Conspiracy by Dr. I.D. Thomas. That's what he did. He linked the ancient Genesis 6 paradigm to the modern day UFO phenomenon. And frankly, he was one of the first ever to do that.
And you've certainly more than picked up the ball and ran with that one. I mean, sounds like he was your L.A. Marzulli, because to many people, you are their introduction to sort of the deeper look at this subject. And the subject of the Nephilim have certainly come up on the show in various conversations, but I do want to kind of do a little bit of a 101 for people that might be tuning in that just, maybe they've heard the word, but they don't really know the source of it or what exactly they are. So why don't we just start with the basics? How would you define exactly what a Nephilim is?
Well, in order to do that, we've got to go back in the scripture, Genesis 3:15. There's Jesus, the pre-incarnate Christ, in the garden. Adam and Eve have just blown it. So the dragon's over here, Satan's over here, Adam and Eve are here, and the pre-incarnate Christ is in the middle.
I know we're 2 seconds into it, but I just want to stop you there because I've heard you say this a lot too, and I think it's a really important thing. You don't say the serpent in the garden. You always say the dragon. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, the dragon, I mean, it says serpent, but his true form was a dragon. We don't know what it really looked like, but one thing we do know is that it was conversing with Eve. We don't know how long it was conversing with Eve. In my opinion, this wasn't the first showing. It could have gone on for weeks, days, months, years. We don't know. But what's interesting is Eve is not taken aback by this, you know, and Adam's not around. So, I mean, Eve's conversing with this thing, and we only get this little snippet of the conversation. I believe it went on for a long time, or a period of time, let's put it that way. And then Eve finally succumbs to it. And of course, it's the lie. So the dragon's there, and the pre-incarnate Jesus looks at the dragon and says, your seed, your offspring, the dragon's seed, the dragon's offspring, will be at war, at enmity, with the offspring, the seed of the woman. The proto-evangelium, the one coming from the woman, will crush the dragon's head, you'll bruise his heel. That, my friend Mark, is the gateway to the entire biblical narrative. If we don't get that right, we don't get the rest of the Bible right. So 3 chapters later, now it's Genesis 6, the Nephilim, the sons of God. Who are the sons of God? B'nai Elohim. And these are the angels, the angelic hosts. These are the bad angels that have come down, the fallen ones. Read the book of Enoch, Samyazavel, ringleader. That's a whole other story, how the Nephilim returned after the flood, countermove, one of my books. So we know from a Genesis 6 narrative, the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, beautiful, and they took wives, plural. So there's no monogamy here. It's they're taking as many as they can. And they went into them, and they had children by them. These were called the Nephilim. So you've got a fallen angel and an earthly woman, human woman, combining the seed, just like Genesis 3:15 tells us is going to happen, creating a hybrid being who is soulless. That's conjecture in my opinion, but they're soulless. Only God can give a soul, and so they're soulless. And I've heard this jumping thousands of years in, you know, into the future where we are now. People who encounter the hybrids tell me it's like they have no soul, right? So, I mean, I'm just not pulling this out of my hat. This is based on decades and decades of research. I believe that the Nephilim were soulless, are soulless. And so Genesis 6, the offspring is there. I never understood why a loving, holy God would destroy the earth, except for Noah. 8 people basically get on the ark.
That's the one that always got me as a kid. I was like, I don't know, man. This guy seems like he gets really pissed off.
He gets really ticked off very easily. And I'm not sure I can trust him. But then once we factor in the Genesis 3:15 narrative, everything just becomes extremely clear. Extremely clear. So the Nephilim were on the earth in those days and also afterwards. When the sons of God, same exact thing. They do it over and over and over and over again until the cross. Then he changes his strategy. And this is where we are now in modernity. So the Nephilim were on the earth in those days and also afterwards. When the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were beautiful, went into them and had children by them. Moses is writing this way over here, thousands of years after Genesis 6. Thousands of years. Moses is writing the Torah. Why wouldn't he just say the Nephilim were on the earth in those days? Period. End. But he doesn't. He doesn't. And some people try to twist that. Well, you know, and also afterwards means in the same general time frame. I'm not buying that for a second. And the reason why they do that is because they can't get their head around the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth incursion, because it's ongoing. Why do you think he confuses the language at the Tower of Babel? What about Abraham and the 5 kings? What about the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah? Finally, with the conquest of Canaan. Literally, it's the seed war on steroids, because you've got the 12 tribes of Israel. From that will be the seed of the woman. We don't know which one yet. God does, but the 12 tribes don't know where Messiah will come from. But the 12 tribes, the seed of Abraham, are there in the field of battle. And guess what? The seed of the dragon is on the field of battle. The Zanzamim, the Emims, the Anakim, the Nephilim, the Rephaim, they're all there. The Horites. Perizzites, they're all there. The Amorites, they're all there. And the seed war clashes on the field of battle. And what's interesting is Joshua and Caleb and the children of Israel, get this, never cleared out Gaza. They never did. They never took the land in Gaza. They never did that. I'll just leave it there.
Okay. We can tie this into current events, certainly, in many, many ways.
Many ways.
Some of these may seem like basic questions, but I want to try to clarify some things again for people that might be being introduced to this for the first time. I'd be surprised if it was the first time for anybody to listen to this show. But nonetheless, when we talk about sort of that initial creation of the Nephilim, when the fallen angels come into the fair maidens or what have you and create these monsters or whatever they may be. Just get me from point A to point B, because they're purely spiritual. Is that not correct in the beginning?
No.
The very beginning. Okay. So,
I mean, this is what people don't get.
Right.
It's not this truncated view of the Bible. Well, there's really no new UFOs. There's no nuts and bolts. There's really no craft. You know, fallen angels can't do this stuff. Really? Where does it say that? You know, and if you hold that paradigm, good luck, because you'll never figure anything else out.
Okay. So you're saying they were physically incarnate Absolutely. Creatures from the beginning.
It was. The fallen angels come down. They absolutely have sex, coitus, with the women. It's physical. There's a word that the late Russ Dizdar taught me, metaschizmonosai, the ability to shapeshift into any form that they choose. We know this because the Bible tells us that, you know, some of you have entertained angels. Well, what do you mean? Because they assumed a human form. When Abraham, the three men show up, they look like men, but they're not. And one of them is the pre-incarnate Christ. When Joshua sees the man holding the sword, which again is a Christophany, that is Jesus himself with a sword, you know, are you for us or against us? Hey, pal, take off your sandals. This is holy ground. It's like, that's mind-boggling. That's not a phantom. It's not a ghost. When Jesus rises from the dead, what does he do? He comes through the wall. That's outrageous. But then touch me, feel me, look at me. Oh, and by the way, what do you guys got to eat? I'm really hungry.
That's physical right there, for sure. All right, so take me from the time of Noah. Let's just focus on the flood for a second there, because so if I think there's a lot of people that might say, okay, well, these Nephilim, they were pretty bad. They were doing some bad stuff. Do we got to wipe everything out with the flood? So what was the purpose of the flood in terms of wiping out the Nephilim? And if that's the case, if these incursions are going to happen again, doesn't God know these incursions are coming again? Why? What's the purpose of this other than to just continue this sort of cycle, which it seems like we're in?
Why does God allow Auschwitz? Why does he allow Hamas to murder and torture and rape 1,200 people? Because we're in the protocols of a heavenly war. And those protocols are set in place and they can't be moved. So either side cannot, if the fallen guys violate the protocols, which they do, and that's why when Jesus dies, where does he go? He goes to the lower parts of Tartarus. Who are there? The chained fallen angels. What are they doing there? That's from the flood. And from the second incursion, they crossed the line. There's a line that's there. We don't know exactly what it is, but we get a glimpse of it from the book of Enoch when Semyaza, the ringleader of all the fallen angels, 200 of them that descend on Mount Hermon. And I've been there. That place is freaky, okay? Mount Hermon, freaky place. Nimrod's castle, super freaky place.
When you say freaky, does it give you a certain...
It's a really weird deal. This is where all the mischief started. This is Nephilim ground zero, just like Gilgal Raphaim. So Semyazi says, and this is what the Lord showed me this. I didn't, you know, I'll tell you the story.
Yeah, please.
See, this is the problem with these shows. I have an hour. We'll probably never get to the two new films, Roswell, which are out now.
We can skip right to some of that stuff. I'm totally fine with that. Yeah.
It's all good. But I mean, 30 films and 13 and a half books, you know, where do you begin, right?
Right, right.
So you've asked a question and I need to follow up on it. Semyaza, who is the leader of the fallen angels, there's 200 of them at the send in the days of Jared on Mount Hermon. So Semyaza says this to the fallen angels, that I fear that you will agree not to do this thing and I alone will bear the penalty of his great sin. So the way that the counter move started, I have read that passage a gazillion times. So I'm going to bed one night and I'm frustrated and I'm talking to my Holy Spirit. And I'm going, you know, who am I? I don't read Greek or Hebrew. I mean, who am I to go up against the naysayers? Who am I?
Today's episode is sponsored by Fox & Sons Coffee. And let me just tell you, Steven of Fox & Sons, he is not just an advertiser. He has been a supporter of this show from day one. And frankly, since before day one, because he came over with me from the old Lions of Liberty days. So true fan of the show. He started this company, Fox & Sons, out of his love for coffee and really out of wanting to further bond with his sons and spend time with him, just like he shared time with his father drinking coffee. He also gets to teach his sons about entrepreneurship and business through this endeavor. So I'm so happy to have Steven and really his whole family, the Fox and the Sons, the whole gang as supporters and sponsors of this show. Not only that, his beans are so high quality, fresh. Look, I just got two new bags right here. I got the Mexican and my favorite, the Den Blend Dark. The beans are super high quality, fresh and sourced from small organic farms, fair trade. None of this GMO garbage. They're all small batch roasted. This is high quality stuff. Subscriptions are by far the best way to get your coffee. I have a couple subscriptions going, but that is the way to go. You never run out that way. I never run out. I always have my supply at Fox & Sons. So I want you to head over to foxandsons.com. Put in your order today. They ship fast. They ship now through the end of February. Also, by the way, you're going to get free shipping on any order over $37.99. By the way, while you're there, use discount code MCS to get 18% off any order over $25. Stephen Fox is a great man, a great friend, great supporter of the show. I encourage you to check out his coffee over at foxandsons.com.
So Semyazi, so I'm in bed one night. I'm going, I don't speak Greek and Hebrew. You know, who am I to go up against these naysayers, all these PhDs that went to all these incredible seminaries and everything else? And the Lord just kind of goes, pass me on the show, Holy Spirit. And he goes, what happened at the end of World War II? And I'm sitting there going, like, what does this have to do with the Nephilim? What do you mean, what happened at the end of World War II? I don't know what happened at the end of World War II. I'm kind of bugged. You know, it's like, what is this, 20 questions? And I think he likes it when he kind of pokes me and I get ticked off a little bit. I really think he likes it on some level. He's still God. I'm casting my crowd. He's the Lord. But I think he likes, you know, we're not just cowering there. We're going, what do you mean? You know, it's like, ah!
He's got to get you riled up a little bit, you know?
He gets me riled up very easily. So, so I go, I don't know what happened at the end of World War II. And he goes, well, what did the Japanese do when they realized that they were going to lose the war? I'm still not getting it. And I go, I don't know. I don't know what they did. And he goes, kamikaze, divine wind. And I just went, okay, I understand that. I know about the kamikaze pilots. I'm sort of an amateur student of World War II. My dad was in it. I get it. Okay. What does this have to do with the Nephilim? The Lord goes, what happens with Semyazi in the Book of Enoch? Mark, I've read this passage a gazillion times. And Semyazi says to the fallen angels, get this. This is all Holy Spirit. I have nothing to do with this. He just opened it up and revealed it to me. That book's been sitting there for thousands of years and no one ever got it. No one's ever said this. No one's ever stated it. And L.A. Marzulli is stating it, but I'm not taking credit for it. It's all him. I have nothing to do with this. He opened it up. He revealed it to me. Semyazi says to the fallen angels, I fear that you will agree not to do this thing, and I alone will bear the penalty of this great sin. Then the 200 watcher angels took an oath on Mount Hermon to do this thing. That's why it's called Mount Hermon, means mountain of the oath.
This thing being come into the women, you know, exactly. Influence mankind, stuff.
They're getting their marching orders from the dragon. Go down and corrupt the genome, corrupt the image. That's Doug Hamm's book, Corrupt the Image, Corrupting the Image. Go down, because think about this. The population is very small at that time, very small on the whole planet. And so all he's got to do is corrupt the genome and Messiah is not going to be born. No Messiah. Over. Checkmate. I win. Planet Earth is mine.
So that's plan A. Muck this stuff up. No Messiah. We win.
And you know what? How close do they get? Eight people? Seriously? This is who God is. He just, you know, it's amazing. And we know from the Book of Enoch, again, people go, oh, the book, oh, he's always talking about the Book of Enoch. Blah, 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 blah. Enoch is quoted in Jude. Okay. Enoch was widely read by everybody in the first century. People knew it. It's not part of our canon, but I'll say this. If you were going to keep a book away from the people that explain exactly what's going on, that's the book you keep away from the people. And until the 19th century, no one knew about the Book of Enoch. The Ethiopians did, but nobody else did. Hardly anybody else. R.H. Charles discovers the Book of Enoch. The Book of Enoch is a window into the antediluvian world. And so we know that the fallen angels, get this, sinned against the animal kingdom. What does that mean? Chimeras, centaurs, minotaurs, fauns, everything in Greek mythology is real. Guess what? I've had reports come over my desk from the Four Corners region more than once, seeing men and women, seeing centaurs, full-blown centaurs.
These are from where, these reports?
These are from the Four Corners area.
Oh, good. Here in the U.S.
Southwest.
Yeah, okay.
In the Southwest.
Gotcha.
A very desolate, very weird place, lots of weird stuff going on there. Why are they lying? I don't know. They won't come on the record, and who can blame them? You know?
Go ahead. These chimeras, you know, we talk about corrupting the genome. Are these, do you think these were done in more of what we would now look at as like a more of a scientific way, or is it just like with the humans? Are they having sex with these animals?
It depends on who you talk to. Ken Johnson will say that they had laboratories and things of doing it that way. We can't go back. We don't know.
A lot of this is speculation.
Yeah. It's not either or, it's both and. They probably did some sort of a mixture. I mean, people copulate with animals now. I mean, you know, right? And we all know how perverted that is. But, you know, that's where we are. They did this. They corrupted the genome. And we're doing it today. This is why the Lord's got to come back. Because Jesus tells us it'll be like the days of Noah when he returns. Mark, we're in it up to our eyeballs, literally. We are in the days of Noah. They are creating chimeras. They are creating chimeras. Make no mistake about it. They're doing it. They are walking amongst us. The hybrids are here. I mean, we have, you know, an hour. I mean, it's like, eh. And that's why people, you know, oh, Ellie's going to hawk his books and his DVDs. Okay, stay ignorant. You know, I can't give them away for free, but there's so much information. 13 books, 30 films, ay chihuahua.
Well, let's talk about where they are today. Because there's not a lot of people that listen to this show are probably not as skeptical as the average man on this kind of thing. But for those that might be skeptical of this sort of thing, people that might say, well, if these chimeras are all around us, like, why don't I see them? Okay, why, you know, every report I see is of a weird creature is always this blurry, whatever. Where are these actual chimeras? What do they look like? Or do they just blend in with us?
Look, at some point in time, they will be released. The late Scott Carpenter and I did a show. And, you know, Scott just passed away not too long ago. And he was a great researcher, and I considered him a good friend. So we did a bunch of shows together. And Scott gave me the video where he's walking. He always had the camera behind him pointing to the rear. He learned how to do that. And sure enough, you can see a perfect circle. And then this entity who is kneeling begins to manifest. Look, there's too many sightings, but they're kept back. The enemy, it's like a surprise attack. The enemy is keeping his forces well hidden. How many Sasquatch are there right now? We have no idea. But we get blurry creatures, the podcast, but we get because everything, look, they short out your cell phone. I've known about this for years. UFOs, cryptids, they short out your cell phone because they're emitting electromagnetic fields that are around them. They're disrupting it. And that's why all the photographs, for the most part, are blurry. The guy that took that one really good photograph of the giant on top of the mountain, he died very shortly after that. That's how the game is played, Mark. That's how the game is played. There are certain things. I was contacted from a guy from a deep state and threatened. Three different ways for exposing the Kandahar giant. They didn't care about my skeleton that I found on Catalina. They didn't care about
Catalina Island in California?
Yeah. Or the elongated skulls that you see behind me here. Didn't care about that.
And where are those, where are those actual skulls from that are behind you?
Caracas. They're models, one-to-one models. The late Richard Shaw and I broke that story. Richard was the director and I was the host, and we did 10 films together. Richard taught me everything I know about filmmaking. After we did that, that's when I was approached by a guy from the deep state, threatening me three different ways, and specifically because of the Kandahar Giant. Now it's the cat's out of the bag. Some guy recently, you know, took our story on Watchers. We broke the story and, you know, had it all on his show. Like he's breaking the story about the Ken. And I called him. I said, look, I mean, you know, you got to give us credit here. We broke the story, just like we broke the story with Robert Salas, who was the base commander at the Maelstrom Intercontinental Ballistic Missile Group up in Montana. We broke the story. Salas came to us and he said, no other production company will allow me to look at the post-production and give my thumbs up in the okay. Will you guys do that? We said, absolutely. Come on the record. We'll show you everything and you can make any, you know, changes you want, carte blanche. And we did. Guess what? He didn't change anything. Rick knew exactly what to do. Rick was a genius, a filmic genius. And so, but we broke the story. And that's the story is this. There's a UFO. Got to have these little props, you know. There's a UFO.
That's why you got to watch the video. LA has the best props of any guest I've ever had.
This UFO is like right over the main gate to the Maelstrom base, intercontinental ballistic missiles. We're talking nukes here. Hot nukes, okay? Hot nukes. This is like, you know, World War III stuff. So Salas is 60 feet, 40, 60 feet down at the command center. And they watch all 10 intercontinental ballistic missiles go offline just like that. Just like that. Just boom, offline. And how is that done? Because these entities can manipulate space, time, matter, and energy. And, you know, this is just, you know, we broke that story. We broke the Kandahar Giant story. We, you know, you go back in the Watchers and even some of the stuff with the elongated skulls, we broke the story. Then the History Channel followed us down and made this big to-do with Brian Forrester. But we were the first people to break that story, as far as I know, with the Paraca skulls. And it went basically viral.
Why do you believe they do things like, you know, disable ballistic missiles or whatnot? Is it just a display of power to those human forces that are in charge of that stuff? Is it to show them? Because a lot of people might say, oh, hey, they're great. They're turning off the nukes. Well, good. Those are bad.
That's not what they're doing it for. So this is where I think it's going, okay? When Jesus cast out the demoniac, the man of the tombs, who are you? We are legion. We are many. And then they say, what have you to do with us, Jesus, the Son of the Most High God? Here's the punchline. Have you come to torment us before the time?
Mm-hmm. Meaning they know their time is up at some point.
It doesn't look like it, their time. This isn't the time when they're about to go into the abyss. They know what it looks like. This isn't it 2,000 years ago. They know. How do they know that? This is something the Lord gave me fairly recently. How do they know that? Have you come to torment us before the time? How do they know what their time looks like? They know because time is transparent to them. They're not all knowing, but they can see further than we can. We're stuck in the space-time continuum. They're not. So they know it's not their time. Fast forward to the book of Revelation. Satan is cast down from heaven. I call it the great eviction notice. Finally. And it says, you know, woe to the inhabitants of earth because the dragon, the devil, Satan is cast down to you. And what? He knows his time is short. How does he know that? So you start putting that together. And the late David Flynn and I talked about this. They are waiting for a nuclear event, which is why shortly after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, we had UFO flaps happening. We had the Foo Fighters. We had, and I'm not talking the rock band. We had the Foo Fighters. We had UFO stuff. We had Kenneth Arnold saying they look like two saucers put together. That's exactly what it looks like. you know, there it is, two saucers, flying saucer. And then shortly after that, we had Roswell, and on and on and on it goes. Circling back to Sasquatch, there are, we don't know the numbers, but the sightings have gone through the roof, okay? Absolutely through the roof, all over the place. In the book of Revelation, it tells us about the Therion, the beasts of the earth. As the late Russ Dizdar, my battle buddy, we were at 90 conferences together, and I really miss him. He was a great friend. So Russ would say, jokingly, Therion, the beast of the earth, these are not hamsters and giraffes. And everybody would laugh, you know, and, but it's true. They're not hamsters and giraffes, and they're not mountain lions or bears. They are, in my opinion, 14-foot Sasquatch who can pop in and out of time. They can bilocate. They can rip your head off before you even know it hit.
Today's episode is sponsored by Fox & Sons Coffee. And let me just tell you, Steven of Fox & Sons, he is not just an advertiser. He has been a supporter of this show from day one. And frankly, since before day one, because he came over with me from the old Lions and Liberty days. So true fan of the show. He started this company, Fox & Sons, out of his love for coffee and really out of wanting to further bond with his sons and spend time with him, just like he shared time with his father drinking coffee. He also gets to teach his sons about entrepreneurship and business through this endeavor. So I'm so happy to have Steven and really his whole family, the Fox and the Sons, the whole gang as a supporters and sponsors of this show. Not only that, his beans are so high quality, fresh. Look, I just got two new bags right here. I got the Mexican and my favorite, the Den Blend Dark. The beans are super high quality, fresh and sourced from small organic farms, fair trade. None of this GMO garbage. They're all small batch roasted. This is high quality stuff. Subscriptions are by far the best way to get your coffee. I have a couple subscriptions going, but that is the way to go. You never run out that way. I never run out. I always have my supply of Fox & Sons. So I want you to head over to foxandsons.com. Put in your order today. They ship fast. They ship now through the end of February. Also, by the way, you're going to get free shipping on any order over $37.99. By the way, while you're there, use discount code MCS to get 18% off any order over $25. Stephen Fox is a great man, a great friend, great supporter of the show. I encourage you to check out his coffee over at foxandsons.com.
Yeah, those are the beasts of the earth. They are in league, in my opinion, with the dragon. They are part of the dragon's army. For the last time.
So do you believe that Sasquatch and perhaps many other cryptid-type creatures are just more of these Nephilim? But you kind of mentioned they're physical creatures, but do you believe they also do have sort of ability to shift, I don't want to say dimensions necessarily, but through space and time in some way?
They do, absolutely. I'll tell you a story. A woman is, it's spring. She's on a farm up in Canada. Her farm backs up to a national forest. There's nobody around. Her nearest neighbor is about a mile away. Beautiful spring day. And her neighbor across the field is hanging clothes. So there's a distance. She's here and there's bushes in front of her. All of a sudden, in those bushes in front of her, remember, she's way back here, about 50 yards away. Here are the bushes. Guess what? Right in front of her eyes, a Sasquatch appears. Right in front of her eyes. Out of nowhere. And he's crouched down below the bush. He doesn't know that she's there, and he's looking across the field at the neighbor hanging clothes, and then she watches it. She's just like spellbound and freaked out, afraid to move, barely able to breathe, and after a few minutes or whatever, the thing just disappears.
In front of her eyes.
Yeah.
So I want to make a lot of connections to, you know, when I was growing up, I was really into the X-Files and all of the unsolved mysteries, all these little various mysteries, whether it be crop circles, cattle mutilations, et cetera. And you tie all of that stuff together. That's what I find so fascinating about your work. So maybe you can make a few of those connections for us here. Maybe we could just start with crop circles, because that's one that's always baffled me. It's one a lot of my more, I guess, skeptical, you might say, friends tell me is just some people with like machetes in the weeds or something. But I've never really bought that
one. You know, Mark, I don't know what you know this. We have 10 films in our UFO series. We are the only Christian ministry that has 10 ongoing films. We cover all aspects of it. The number one is just, you know, UFOs are real, burgeoning, not going away. and lots of testimony. Number two, I sit down with people, Francisco Carrera, head of Exopolitics Portugal, Preston Dennett, prolific author, all these. We're talking shop. We're talking shop. It's just not talking heads. We're cutting to other things. I get all that. But we're talking shop. What are we really looking at here? Three is close encounters of the third and fourth kind. Really up close, this is what's going on. Here are the witnesses' testimonies. Four, and this is where it goes into the deep end of the pool. One, two, and three are the primers. Get people used to what's going on. Four talks about the abduction phenomena. Men and women are taken. Sperm is taken from the womb, from the men. Ovum is taken from the women. Hybrid children, the women find themselves pregnant. That child is taken usually in the third month of pregnancy. The woman doesn't know what happened to it. Sometimes they wind up in mental institutions because no one believes them. It gets really crazy, okay? Number five is on...
You mean a woman will be pregnant and then the baby will just disappear and they will claim that the... And people will sort of, I guess, the medical community will question her.
You got to watch number four, the abduction phenomena. We have a woman, Karen Wilkerson, we actually published her book, Stolen Seed, Evil Harvest. Books flying off the shelves here. The bottom line is this. She was abducted so the time she was 6 years old. She was impregnated by them three times. They come and they take the baby from her. Number six, I'll skip five, which is and crop circles.
Can I just ask, did she have like confirmed medical pregnancies in those during those times?
Absolutely.
And then no scientific explanation.
Talk to my OBGYN. Okay. No fetal tissue, no heartbeat, no DNC necessary. When we go into cattle mutilations, which is number six, very, very dark, darkest film I've ever worked on. There was one, a lamb was mutilated in West Texas very recently. A friend of mine, I've been at his ranch, Mike Hamilton. I interviewed him yesterday. It'll air on Friday on my show. And we have all the pictures of typical perfect cattle mutilation. The whole jaw is exposed. No blood in the animal. The eye is cored out with surgical precision. The anus and sex organs cored out with perfect precision. Why are they doing this? Bovine blood, cow blood, animal blood can be used interchangeably in a human transfusion. Not too many people know about that. That's a medical fact.
Didn't they use, I believe, and I could be wrong, and when they, in all these ancient writings about making homunculi, they, I believe, used pigs or cow blood as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's interchangeable. It's interchangeable. So we may be the first, my business partner, Gil Zimmerman, and I, we may be the first people ever to connect that. We believe that the cattle mutilation does two things. It creates fear like crazy. It spreads all over the place. But the genetic material is used to create an artificial womb for the hybrids that are taken from the women who are reabducted in the third month of pregnancy. They can't, that fetus cannot live outside the womb. They place it right into an artificial womb.
And they can't let it just come to term in the regular woman.
No, they can't
for obvious reasons. Yeah. So answer me this then. When they are abducted and inseminated, what are they inseminated with? Is that just Nephilim semen, I guess? Or
you know, you're asking a question that
I'm asking a medical question that maybe you don't have all the details on, but right.
I mean, it's like, you know, I'm here with Beelzebub, and we're asking Beelzebub some questions. Thank you for coming on the record. Really appreciate it. So how does all this work? I mean, you know.
Oh, I'm glad you asked, actually. Let me open this cabinet.
Okay. And I've got a PowerPoint presentation.
I guess I'm just more curious what you think about it than the facts on that matter.
I think that this is a very complex phenomenon. I think the hybrids sometimes rape the women. I think sometimes they can be artificially inseminated. I think other times, for instance, Karen had a handler from the time she was 6 years old. So when she was older, it always appeared as a very good looking human being, but then it would shift into a reptilian. That reptilian entity raped her when she was older. She writes about this in the book. This is not for the faint of heart. It's the deep end of the pool. But this is why if we don't get Genesis 3:15 correct, when we start talking about this, we go, oh my gosh, what's going on? Why do you think the Most High God, El Elyon, The Most High God says to the children of Israel, wipe them all out. Men, women, children, animals, everything. Why does he say that? And unless you know Genesis 3:15, you can tap dance around that till the cows come home. That's genocide. The moment we plug in Genesis 3:15, these are Nephilim tribes. They are hybrid entities. They are genetic abominations to the Lord because he did not create them. And this is why that mandate, and they are soulless.
Why didn't they just tell me this in Hebrew school? It would have all made a lot more sense. Maybe it's just too dark, they think, for the kids. But I would at least, at least I understand. They would skew, okay.
Look, I learned about the seed war from Gary Stearman. Gary Stearman taught us at the Nephilim Mounds Conference years ago. And we all sat there with our jaws on the ground. I knew Genesis 6. Dr. I.D.E. Thomas knew Genesis 6, but no one took the step backwards. The only person I ever got it from was Gary Stearman. And I just sat there and went, oh my gosh, it explains everything. There's the seed war. It's all about the seed, which is the title of Gary Stearman's presentation. I'm standing on his shoulders. I owe a great debt to Gary because he's the one that unpacked that, illuminated it, revealed it to all of us. That is the gateway. The gateway to the entire biblical narrative is Genesis 3:15. If you don't understand it, you can go to Hebrew school to the second coming and you'll never understand what you're looking at.
And then
at.
You leave just thinking God's a big, you know, a bit of a hothead.
Yeah, he's genocidal, he's maniacal, he's capricious. And this is why someone like Richard Dawkins can just tear apart the Christians because they have no defense, you know. And he'll say in his very effete way, well, I mean, the God of the Bible is what he is, isn't he? He's maniacal, he's capricious. He's, you know, he favors one tribe in front of another.
I know we're getting impressions today. This is great.
Right. Thank you very much. Yeah, but that's what he would say. Well, Rich, come over here. I'll tell you all about it. Let's go have a pint, as they say, over in your neck of the woods across the pond, and we'll sit down and talk mano a mano. You don't understand the biblical narrative. You don't understand Genesis 3:15. So, of course, when you get to the promised land, it is genocide. I thought that 44 years ago when I came across the line and gave my life to the Lord. I went, just like you said, this guy's a real hothead. I'm not sure. Jesus, I get this other guy. It's like, whoa, right? And that's how it seemed. Until I read Dr. I.D.E. Thomas's book, circling back to that.
I'm somewhat a jest, but honestly, growing up, I think for a long time, I didn't really vibe with religion because of things like that were never explained to me in a way. And I don't know if it would have made sense to explain to 8-year-old Mark, look, hey, there's these demons and Nephilim. But I don't know. It would have made more sense to me than just thinking God just wiped out a bunch of people because he didn't really like how they were partying or whatever it is.
Yeah. If you were going to keep one thing away from the people, that's what you keep. And it's not taught in seminary, as you know. It's not taught. And I was on the phone. A friend of mine called me up and said, L.A., these two rabbis are on the phone with me. We're talking about gemstones, blah, blah, blah. Will you talk to them? Sure. So I'm on a call. There's four of us on the call. And we were talking about gemstones. So after that, one thing led to another. And I started talking about Genesis 3:15 and the Nephilim. They were blown away. These are rabbis. They had no idea. No idea. I mean, if you're going to hide something, if you're going to hide the whole plan, which they've done really well, by the way, from the church and from Israel, that's what you hide. Because without that, you don't know what's going on. You have no idea what's going on. None. Sorry. You don't know. It sets up the rest of the biblical narrative. In my opinion, it's the gateway to everything, Genesis 3:15.
I think we diverted away a little bit when we were talking about the cattle mutilations, but I did want to circle back.
Crop circles.
The crop circles, exactly.
Okay. In our fifth film is on crop circles. And we show all the different circles, the complexity, the complex geometry, all that. Then we show the hoaxers. Then we show orbs in the field, which are making the crop circles. But then we go to Ohio and we got the still footage and all the footage of this crop circle from, I just can't think of his name. It'll come in a minute, but he was kind enough to let us use those pictures. He's a crop circle researcher, but that crop circle is not in a little field of, you know, rapeseed or wheat 3 feet high. It's in a field of standing corn 8 feet tall. You can't make a crop circle in a standing field of corn that's 8 feet tall. It can't do it. And the stalks are not broken, they are bent. And they are woven. They are woven like this together. It's all in the film. And that's why we chose it. That crop circle appeared right before the very first Nephilim Mounds conference in Ohio, which for the first time in history came up with a different paradigm to who created these mounds in Ohio and elsewhere, not Native Americans. No way. Now, if I say that, immediately I'm accused of being a racist.
Of course, right.
Well, yeah, of course. Why don't we just put the label over the side? I know that makes you feel better, but let's sit down and talk about this. If Native Americans had advanced geometry, then why isn't this written down on a buffalo skin someplace or a deer hide? Why wasn't advanced geometry and knowledge of an 18 and a half year lunar calendar, the Metonic cycle? They didn't know about that. No tribe knew about it. This is something else. But they don't want to admit that, because the moment they admit that, then all of a sudden the whole biblical narrative comes looming into the picture. It changes history as we know it. That's why they hate me so much. That's why they come against me, because I believe we've proven without a doubt. And wait till you see the other two films that will be released sometime this year. We spent about a week in Ohio filming with a team of people. And I think once this comes out, we will show beyond the shadow of a doubt that we are looking at the fingerprints of a supernatural. Human beings did not create the Great Circle Mound or the Octagon Mound. Human beings were involved, but the leadership there was something else. Fallen Angel Technology, Fritz Zimmerman's book, right? The Nephilim Chronicles, Fallen Angels in the Ohio Valley. That book changed my life years ago. And Fritz and I have done a bunch of films on the On the Trail of the Nephilim series. We'll be meeting at America's Stonehenge in the fall to film again.
It's really interesting that all this is coming out at a time where the work of Graham Hancock is getting a lot more popular, where, I mean, his book is called Fingerprint of the Gods, but in the end, it's really, he really says that, well, these are just ancient humans, basically, that were more advanced than we realized. But you would say, no, they certainly weren't humans, or maybe there was some human DNA mix in there.
He's a real smart guy, and I read his book before I knew anything about all this stuff. But we differ. He doesn't believe in giants. He doesn't believe in the supernatural. And I'm a frank supernaturalist. You know, Graham, the machines that cut the stones of Sacsayhuaman are no longer here. We don't know how it was done. Conjecture, no one knows. No one knows how you move 80-ton stones and place them perfectly, polygonal shapes, and on it goes. Where did the knowledge of an 18-and-a-half-year Metonic cycle come from? It comes from the fallen angel Sariel, who showed the course of the moon to human beings. It was just given to us. Who's Sariel? He's a fallen angel. How do I know that? The Book of Enoch tells us. But Graham just goes, nope. And he's got a very, in my opinion, he's not here to defend himself. Maybe he would say something different. I don't know. But it seems to me, from my vantage point, and Graham, if I'm wrong, please forgive me, but Mr. Hancock has a very anti-Christian bias. And so, as do many of the New Agers and other researchers, and with that anti-Christian bias, they will never, ever in a million years get to the truth. Now, I realize that some people go, L.A., that's the most arrogant statement I've ever heard in my life. Well, once we plug in the fallen angels, everything just like a set of dominoes, click, 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 click. There it is.
I'm sure you get all the time that, like, oh, L.A. Marzulli makes a lot of sense. He makes all these connections. If we would just let all this Bible stuff go, these are obviously the aliens doing all this. I mean, I'm sure you get that kind of thing.
See, that's what they say. And, you know, when I'm speaking I've been maligned and badmouthed and all sorts of stuff at New Age conferences. I'm very selective where I go now, because I don't want to spend a weekend with a bunch of people who think I got four heads. I just won't do it anymore. Last one we did was last year. And I was ostracized by some of the other speakers. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I'm 73 years old. I'm a big guy, and I can handle myself. So, I mean, it is what it is. You know, you can think what you want. Good luck with that. And, in the end, we'll know where the truth lies. We will know. It will become very evident.
Back on the crop circles, though. What I really want to get to on the crop circles is, what do you believe the purpose of them is? Is it some kind of communication for them, or is it some way they are communicating to us? Or, yeah, for example, like that, what you just talked about, that crop circle appearing before your conference, that almost feels like a message to you guys, maybe. I don't know it how was. You see that.
It was a signal. They knew what we were up to. And that's why it's the second largest crop circle in the United States. It's huge. In a field of eight foot corn, you can't make a crop circle like that. So it's deliberate, because what this does is it shows that they move and can do whatever they want with impunity. No one's going, hey, what are you guys doing in my field? That's not happening. You know, it's not happening at all.
Getting chased away with a pitchfork or something.
They do what they want to do. And it's a signal. It's a signal. It's like, you know, bad cop, good cop. So, they must be benevolent. Look how beautiful this formation is.
You do see a lot of that talk in like the more new agey.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Oh, that's our space brothers.
The geometrical beauty of the crop circle is like,
that's what they do. But you guys aren't getting it. You know, you're not just crop circles, cattle mutilations, abductions, implants. We've covered all that. We've covered it all.
One thing I want to circle back to, you mentioned, you know, post-World War II, and it is a pretty wild time for all this stuff. And I'm just curious your thoughts on how a number of events seem to happen maybe in the exact same year, I want to say. Roswell, as you mentioned, also the Dead Sea Scrolls are discovered around the same time. Interestingly enough, considering all the connections you make. Israel becomes a nation. I believe the Babylon working rituals of Aleister Crowley may have been that same year. If not, it was around that same time.
Around the same time, correct.
Trinity test as well, I believe, was right around there.
Yeah,
so this is, I got to think, and you probably agree, these are not all coincidences that all these events are happening at the same time.
Absolutely not. And this is why we are in the days of Noah. He's got to return soon, in my opinion. It's just look at what's going on in Israel now. They will, jumping subjects sort of, they will go into Lebanon. They will go after Hezbollah. They have no choice. Absolutely. Hezbollah's not standing down. Every day there's this like deal going on. They will go into Rafah. They have to. They've got to completely annihilate Hamas. And, you know, be that as it may, I think we're in day, 147, 148? Once Gaza is put to bed, and it's taken a long time, because millions, if not billions of dollars that were given to aid the Palestinians were used to create this infrastructure of secret tunnels and armaments. That's what it was used for. You know, people of the world, wake up. They don't want to get along with Israel. All they want to do is kill as many Jews as they possibly can.
Do you think the Nephilim themselves are involved in like that kind of war in some way? Are they shaping that actual like more political, what we would look at as more surface level political thing?
That's a very loaded question and a very dangerous one. I'll say to that is this. Gaza is mentioned in the Bible, and Gaza was never conquered by the Israelites. They never took the land. And so it remained a Nephilim site. That area.
Interesting. We have about 10 more minutes or so. So there's a couple of things I want to touch on further. You mentioned the multiple incursions. I think you said we're in like the fourth or fifth incursion. So obviously the one was that initial one described in the Book of Enoch. So what are some of the other incursions, and like when does our current iteration start? How do you sort of differentiate those?
Well, the first incursion obviously is the Genesis 6 incursion.
Okay, right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right after that, the Tower of Babel. Nimrod becomes Gomorrah. So there's something going on there. We're not exactly sure what it is. I wrote in the book, The Cosmic Chess Match, that Nimrod becomes Gomorrah through ritualistic sex magic. The next thing we do is we see Abraham and the five kings, four or five kings. They're going at it. Who are those kings? They're Nephilim. That's who they are. Finally, we get to the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Who's there? Book of Jude tells us exactly who they are. The angels of heaven lusted after them and went after what? Strange flesh. They are Nephilim. And every time a Nephilim are there, the judgment's always the same. There's no grace and mercy. Lot is a type of rapture. Noah is a type of rapture. The judgment doesn't come down until Noah is sealed in the ark. The judgment on Sodom and Gomorrah doesn't come down until Lot is removed. Judgment doesn't happen. Same thing with us. We're not going to start the tribulation until the church is taken up. We are Lot. We are Noah. We are living in the days of Noah, like the days of Noah. And then finally, the Nephilim are all over the place. after that in the Promised Land. I mean, all the tribes are there, for crying out loud. Do a study. There's a book by Gary Wayne coming out. I can't wait till he comes out with it. And Gary is a different ministry than I have. We're both in the same field, but I'm out in the field. I'm not in the library. Mm-hmm. Gary is, you know, he camps out in the library. And his material is just incredible. I don't agree with all of it, but it's very scholarly and done with great erudition on his part. And I can't wait till he gets this out. But he's done a deep dive on the tribes that were in the Levant, that were in the Promised Land before the conquest. You see, if it's not Genesis 3:15, if it's not the culmination of the seed war, then it's genocide. I mean, there's no way around it. We can tell, their sin was so bad and we had to kill them all. Really? Really? You're not buying that for a second, I hope. But see, that's
right. I mean, we're all sinners. So, I mean, if that's all it takes,
we'll have a firing squad in the circle. Let's fire, you know?
So, God. All right.
Yeah, people don't get it. Genesis 3:15, I'll say it again, is the gateway to the biblical prophetic narrative. If you have the wrong exegesis, you can't get to square one. A person will never understand what is going on, ever.
Talk about these hybrids. What is the greater purpose, other than just they feel like procreating and creating more beastly weird things to haunt the world? What is the greater purpose of the creation of all these hybrids, that they go through all this trouble of abducting someone, impregnating them with whatever, coming back in 3 months later? What is this all leading to?
Well, Satan's on number 2-1. Late Chuck Messler said that when I asked him, Chuck, what about the hybrids? Without missing a beat, Chuck Messler said, L.A., Satan's out number 2-1. He's creating an army, which is exactly what we're seeing. Satan knows that his time, something's going on here. He knows that the rider on the white horse will come down with the armies of heaven. And in his hubris, he still thinks that somehow he can twist it. He's not going to twist it. I think the Lord showed me this, that it's not like we're lopping heads off of orcs. It's not what it is. It says in the word, in the biblical narrative, that he is before Jesus. Let me just do the whole thing. It's Colossians, I think it's 15. I could be wrong, but I think it's 15. So he is the image of the unseen God, the firstborn of creation, for all things were created by him, and in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. He is the firstborn, visible and invisible. Whether thrones, dominions, rulers, or authority, all things were created by him and for him, and he is before all things, here's the punchline, and he holds all things together. The sword that comes out of his mouth, in my opinion, he just stops holding them all together, and they just collapse and bleed out. He just stops holding them together. It's all he has to do. He is before all things, and he holds all things together. So he goes, sorry, guys, I know you hate me. That's okay. you're already totally in with the beast and the whole crew. That's okay. But guess what? We're not putting up with this anymore. I'm here to reign for 1,000 years in Jerusalem. I am the rightful king, and we're about to do this. So guess what? That sword, he speaks it out, and they just collapse on the field of battle, in my opinion.
So do you see these hybrids, in the mind of the dragon, I guess you could say, is it just the pride? Is it that the pride that started all this? That, well, you know, even though I know how this all ends, maybe I can build an army. Maybe I can just overtake,
He's in his hubris. Think about this. And, you know, I jokingly laugh that when we're in our glorified bodies, one of the first things I'm going to do is to create a petition, you know, to not release the dragon out of the pit after the 1,000 years. We'll have millions of signatures. Don't do it, Lord. Why does the Lord allow that? Why does he allow the dragon to come out? He knows what's going to happen. The dragon's not going to change his spots. He's not. It's the same old thing. The hate that's in him is to the depth of something. The hate, perversion, lust, insanity that's in him, that's who he's become, is irreparable, in my opinion. But the Lord gives him one more chance. And what does he do? gathers the armies together and goes up against Jerusalem. Hey guys, let me tell you a story. The Lord, it was a dream last year, or maybe a year before that. I don't get these things every day, just so the folks know. I'm not some, you know, heavy supernatural guy.
This guy's on the phone with God every night here.
Yeah, it's not the way it works. But the Lord does speak to me from time to time. And the one dream I had, extremely vivid. I was on my white horse. It was in the millennium. And I was in a very desolate, scorched earth place somewhere on the planet. And my horse was about 50 feet, 100 feet away. And I was going very slowly over this burnt out, blackened area. There was steam coming up. There was, you know, peals of fire. And in front of me, 30, 40 feet away, there's a fissure in the earth. And as I'm looking at that fissure, two hands come up like this. And then there's this being that looks a lot like Gollum from The Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I look at him and I say, I know who you are. And instantly, I am hit in my solar plexus with some sort of energy field, and I go flying back 10, 15, 20 feet. I take one more look at him. I run to my horse. I get on my flying white horse, and I fly to Jerusalem. That's what they are. They're flying white horses. How else are they going to get here, right? So I fly back to Jerusalem. I'll tell you another story. I fly back to Jerusalem, and
it's another story. This is the same story. It seems like an extension.
Okay. No, it is an extension, but it's another story.
I gotcha.
Okay. You know, chapter one, 44 gotcha. Years ago. Chapter two, 20 years ago. That's the way it works.
Understood.
So I go, I need to see the king. And I'm ushered into the king. And I look at Jesus and I say, he's out. And my Lord looks at me with very, very solemn expression. And he says, I know. And that's the end of the dream.
Time for coffee for LA.
I'm just saying.
Well, LA, I think a couple of wild, you know, flying horse dream stories is about as good a way to wrap things up as I can imagine. I of course could ask you 10,000 more questions, and we could spend. Yes, I got the fireworks. That's fantastic. I was really hoping you'd come with the special effects.
There you go.
Again, you got to watch the video. Not only does LA have props, he's got special effects. He's got everything. But LA, as I said, we could go on for thousands of hours. But you already have gone on for thousands of hours. You could say in various formats, your books, your films, that way. So why? Discover everybody the roundabout. Hopefully this has whet their appetite on the type of work that you do. Okay. And they can go off to the races from here. So, you know, send them down the right track.
Yes. Streaming.lamarzulli.net. You can start streaming the films and get educated. Streaming like a stream .lamarzulli.net. The website, all the books are there. All the videos are there. If you want hard copies, lamarzulli.net. What are you waiting for? What do you guys, it'll blow your mind. No matter where you start, it'll blow your mind.
I can attest to that for sure. All right. LA, thank you so much for coming on my show.
Thanks, Mark. God bless you, sir.
Take care. God bless you.
You too.